The Florida community of mindfulness is happy to make these talks available to you. If you find this talk to be a benefit, please consider making a donation to support us. You'll find a donation button on the talks section of our website, floridamindfulness.org. Thank you, and may you be happy and free of suffering.
So this is the first day of this four-day meditation retreat. And the retreat is entitled Stabilizing the Restless Mind, a four-day meditation retreat on the practices of mindfulness and calm abiding. And the description says, none of us are strangers to a restless, easily distractible, and often unstable mind, endlessly tossed about by thoughts, emotions, and perceptions that are triggered by external and internal events. We often feel we are on a roller coaster ride of which we have little or no control. To remedy this unpleasant and sometimes destructive pattern, the Buddhist path offers us a pragmatic and effective meditative path to calm and stabilize our minds. Whether one is a relative newcomer to the path or an old hand, we can all benefit from practicing in a retreat setting the meditations associated with mindfulness and single-pointed concentration. Receiving instruction and guidance in various practices of the Samatha or calm-abiding meditation tradition in a systematic and developmental manner will allow retreatants to learn, practice, and experience the way of mental tranquility, stability, and clarity that has supported Buddhist practitioners for thousands of years. So is that clear? That's what we're here for. I often say to people when they come to Empty Cloud, which is our solitary retreat facility, so, you know, two things are going to go on during the course of this retreat. On the one hand, you will be studying and practicing whatever you've come here to study and practice, to meditate on. But at the same time, you will be learning a lot about yourself. Because you will be present and observing and hopefully watchful of the self, the thoughts, feelings, and perceptions of the self that will bring all kinds of stuff to what you're trying to practice. And I often point out to people who come on retreat, whether they come on for 3 or 4 days or 7 days or longer, that please understand that nothing is happening. Okay? The colors of the walls will be the same for the whole 4 days. Right? Whatever art is on the wall will stay the same for all 4 days. The furniture will stay the same for all 4 days. Right? So there is kind of a sameness in that. But everything else, your moods, your enthusiasm, your boredom, all the things that come up in your mind, that's all you. You brought it here, you're projecting it, and hopefully you won't take it home with you as much. But we need to be very clear right from the outset. It's sort of what I said to you last night. There's nothing going on here. Right? We get up in the morning, gong, gong, gong. We get up. We go to the bathroom. We get dressed. We brush our teeth. Whatever we do in the morning, we come down and get a cup of tea. We come into the meditation hall. We do our best at whatever the practice is. Then we go to breakfast. After breakfast, we do whatever we do. Then we do outdoor walking meditation. Then we come into the meditation hall, we do meditation. Right? Now we are listening to a Dharma talk. After the Dharma talk, we will have a break, do some walking meditation, and we'll have lunch, which is simply something we eat. It's a physical process. Then we can rest. And then the day will continue like that. There'll be a whole series of activities that we will be involved in. Right? And the simplest thing would be to what? To just flow along. No resistance, you know, great ease, flow. Doesn't that sound easy? But along the way, and maybe you've met him or her already, you will hear the voice of someone else, right? Very intimately. And it will just be projecting all kinds of thoughts and opinions and ideas about what's going on, right? Have you heard that already? Right? Judging, right, wrong, you know. Because remember, one of the characteristics of the self is what? It can always do things better than anyone else. All right, so it's right there. I often say to people, if only we could be in charge of the world, what a wonderful world it would be, wouldn't it? We could make everything go our way. So again, you've already might have heard that voice of that self, judging, evaluating, assessing, comparing, complaining. But even if that doesn't occur, you may find during the course of this retreat, and you may have found it already, that there is this other voice that wants to talk about, see, at least that complaining, assessing, judging is at least in relationship to what's going on in the retreat, even though it's really not beneficial at all and probably harmful because it disturbs our mind. Remember, we came here, why? To calm, to have a calm mind. And already we might see that our mind is not calm, even in relationship to what's gone on in the last half a day or whatever it's been. But then you might notice during the course of this day in which nothing's going on, you might notice that the mind also, when it has a little free time on its hands, and when you come on retreat, you have lots of free time on your hands, it wants to bring up stuff. Anybody notice that? Things that have nothing to do with what we're doing here. Issues, problems, fantasies, projections. I mean, just endless, right? All of which disturbs the calmness of our mind. So it is very important that we understand right from the beginning that these practices that we'll be doing, these meditative practices, both on the cushion and off the cushion that we'll be doing, to help us calm and stabilize our mind, are about our mind. We want a calm and stable mind. And our calm and stable mind should not be based on what's going on around us or within us. Right? I mean, we can be in a situation where there's lots of activity and we can be what? Calm. Right? We can be around people who are very agitated, and we can be calm, right? We can, you may not believe this, but you can even be within your own mind when there's lots of thoughts or whatever going on, and the overwhelming feeling of your mind is calmness, even with the activity going on. So please understand, it's not, you know, some people get very erroneously focused, that a calm mind means a mind in which I can suppress everything. See, if I can just suppress all my thoughts, suppress all my bad feelings, you know, and if the external world will just cooperate with me and everything just goes perfectly, then what? then I'll be calm. I'll be peaceful. But can you see the falsity of that? Can you see the great problem with that? So it's important that we, again, right from the beginning, understand we are seeking to calm our mind. That's like in a bigger sense. Many people identify their mind just with their thinking. If I can just calm my thinking. But mind is that which in which thinking is arising. I'll say that again. Mind is that which in which thinking is arising. Memories are arising. Feelings are arising. Perceptions are arising. Ideas are arising. Right? Images are arising. All those things are arising in what? Mind. They come and go. In what? In the mind. The same way, we can look at the sky and say, oh, the clouds in the sky, no clouds in the sky, birds flying through the sky, planes flying through the sky. Right? Now it's raining. Now it's clear. But all that's occurring in the sky. The sky is more than that which is appearing in it. And notice that the sky is basically okay with whatever goes on within it, doesn't it? Right? The sky itself doesn't go, I only like sunny days, you know. There's one thing I can't stand are clouds, especially those, you know, those rainy clouds and those noisy ones. Like making all that noise, you know. Right? The sky is not like that, does it? It doesn't matter what kind of cloud is going through it. It doesn't matter, you know, whether it's a plane or a bird or it's a nice bird or it's a not nice bird. It's a predator bird or it's a very sweet little singing bird. The sky doesn't care, does it? The sky is spacious. The sky is open. The sky has no resistance to anything. Therefore, it's as we might say, the essential nature of space is this open, right? Calmness, we might say. It's our own word. Right? So even when a hurricane moves through and the sky gets all rumbled up, lots of activity, as soon as the hurricane passes through, right, people are amazed. The day after, it's almost like, it's like we can't, it's like we don't want it to be, right? But, you know, the day after the hurricane, the sky is blue. Everything is clear. We don't want it to be that way, right? But yet that is the way it is. So, when we talk about stabilizing the restless mind, we're talking about the restlessness that goes on within the mind. Is that clear? Now, we go at it in Buddhism in at least two major ways. One way we go at it is through, we might say, right perception, right view, right thinking. In other words, that we see things and we understand things in a way that allows us, in the face of what's going on, to remain calm. Okay. Because we understand what's going on. So therefore, we are not unduly upset or thrown. So that comes from the study and the observation of life. The Buddha's teachings. But that in and of itself may just give us a conceptual picture, an idea. They may be right ideas, but not necessarily enable us to really live it, which is what we want to do. So that is why this direct path of meditation, where we are directly working with our minds is so important. Is that clear? And that is why traditionally in Buddhism there is such emphasis on the meditative path for those who just don't want to, again, have a philosophical or conceptual understanding that helps them cope better with reality. We want to have an intuitive understanding that comes from realization, that the ideas become real. Right. When they're real, we really know it. When we really know it, we can really live it. Otherwise, we're always struggling to remember. You know, what's the right view here? How am I supposed to be interpreting this? Or how am I supposed to, you know, we're always trying to remember. What is the teaching? You see, we're trying to, right? Because it's just conceptual. We don't know it. So, you know, last night, by the way, how's the temperature in here? Hot. Where is he? Oh. Yeah. Now, again, you know, I did one of the things that I'll just mention in a minute that I did mention last night was about going along with things, right? So this is important. I mean, and this morning there was a problem with the food, right? I guess they ran out of oatmeal, and right? I don't know, there might have been some other things going on. So it's wonderful, you see, that even in retreat, you know, sort of this controlled environment, that things don't work. You see, if everything worked, we could think we are enlightened Buddhists. Why? I've just been on this wonderful retreat. I was so peaceful, you know. And that could be because everything went my way, you see. Then I think I'm an enlightened being, right? But since the world doesn't operate that way, since the world is constantly disappointing us, since the world is constantly operating on many, many variables, it's good to be a little warm. Now, it doesn't mean, like I just said to Bill, and to, you know, took a consensus, and if there was something to do, we did it. But there might not have been anything to do, right? Or it could be that half the people said, it's a little warm, the other half of the people said, it's perfect. Right, you know, then we're in trouble. Right? So that is why it is so important that we can be even with those of us who are a little warm and be okay with that. See, it doesn't become a source of suffering to us. It doesn't disturb our mind. It doesn't disturb our calmness and stability. And we need to see that it's often just in these little ways that we're constantly reacting to what's going on in life that our minds are constantly agitated, constantly disturbed, constantly off kilter. Is that clear? So, you know, in the course of this retreat, you will have a lot of opportunity to develop calmness. So my hope is that things don't go too smoothly. All right? And knowing human beings and the way we operate in the world, there's a good chance it won't, because we are less than perfect. And that's good. That's good. Don't take that as a negative if things don't go our way. But again, one of the things we want to do in retreat is watch our mind. Watch our reactions. Watch how we let just little things disturb us. How we begin to obsess, repeat. Everybody know what I'm talking about? And it just gets into the mind, and we just let it kind of germinate there. So it gets bigger and bigger and more disturbing. Right? And that goes on in what's going on, but it also goes on just when things are arising. So, in meditation now, all the things that we talk about in terms of Buddhist teachings, we have an opportunity to realize. So last night, you remember I said there are some kind of big things for us to be doing during the course of this retreat. I think I remembered two of them. I wasn't really sure if I remember the third one, so we'll see. The first thing I said was, you know, we need to learn to stay in boundaries, right? No past, no present, right? Learn to stay no past, no future. Learn to stay in the present. Actually, in truth, there is no thing as the present, but that's another retreat. For now, we can kind of go, yeah, there is a present moment. You know, we want to learn that. Now, where do we learn that? We learn that in our minds. Right? How do we learn how to do that? We learn that by doing it in our minds, because it is within our minds that thoughts of the past, thoughts of the future, images of the past, images of future, fantasy, you know, the whole thing will arise in our mind. Now, for most of us, we are not very mindful and self-aware in our daily life. So we don't even know that we're doing that. Right? So many people, if they heard that teaching about, you know, not dwelling in the past, not fantasizing, dwelling in the future, live in the present, they'd look at you like, what are you talking about? Right? I mean, what else is there? I mean, isn't that what human beings do? Right? Don't we endlessly ruminate about the past? Right? Don't we endlessly think about, plan for, fantasize, hope, you know, about the future? Right? So we have to understand that for most human beings, that is normal. Right? They don't see that as a source of suffering. They don't see that as a source of a mind out of control and going wherever it wants. Right? So the idea of learning to live in the present is a skill and an experience that we learn on the cushion. How can I learn to be present to my body and my breath? Right? Because that's, when you're on retreat, what's going on a lot. Right? You're learning a skill. Can I be present to the food when I'm eating it and the taste? Can I be present when I look at people to see them? When I'm walking around, can I be present to the experience of walking? Can you see when I'm lying in my bed? Can I be present to the experience of lying in my bed, taking a shower? And it doesn't mean that thoughts aren't arising, but they're in the background. We're not distracted by them. We're basically present to what we're doing. So that is why learning to live in the present moment is something we learn primarily in meditation, how to do it. Is that clear? That's why we have a 4-day retreat just on that. It's so we can develop the skill. Why? So when we can go back out in the world, we can learn to live that way. I also said no resistance, right? Just move through whatever going on. Now, where do we have our biggest, often, resistance in life? Within our own minds, right? And especially people who meditate. You may find that thoughts, feelings, perceptions, mind states are arising in your mind when you're trying to meditate, right? And you may have a lot of resistance to them, right? You don't want them to be there, do you? We have another agenda. And so what ensues is a lot of drama or struggle, or anyway, we'll talk more about how to handle it. But can you see, it actually is in meditation where we learn to sit in total openness and let whatever arise, arise. We don't try to control anymore. We don't get agitated. We don't fight with ourselves. Many people are like a house divided. You know, one side, the side you want is over here, and the part of you you don't want is over here, and they're always in battle. Who's going to win today? Who's going to be in charge? Right? And then we wonder, why am I not peaceful? Why don't I have a peaceful mind? Why don't I calm? Because within our own minds, we're not at peace with ourselves. And when I say ourselves, I mean the thoughts and feelings and perceptions that are continually arising within us. So, how do we learn? Where do we learn to be someone who goes with the flow? Who accepts things as they are? Who moves through life with ease? Well, first we learn that on the cushion, you know, within our own minds. Once we get it there, then it's much easier to take it into life. So this is all a great learning. And then this final thing, which is to just live with this sense that everything is fine. Again, which is so antithetical to the way so many of us live. So many people in our culture, maybe including ourselves, we live with a sense, no, nothing's fine. Right? I'm not fine, you're not fine, the world's not fine, work's not fine, the weather's not fine, the food's not fine. Right? It's always like, you know, it's this other model, this model of dissatisfaction. The Buddha called dissatisfaction suffering. Dukkha. Many people think it's just ordinary and that, you know. I mean, you get together with people and what do they talk about? Problems. What's wrong? What they're dissatisfied with. Who they're dissatisfied with. And a lot of people dissatisfied with everybody. Dissatisfied with their husband, with their wife, with their children, with their parents, with their colleagues. With, you know, it's just like with every politician. You know, it's just like endless. We're just dissatisfied. And then we're, you know, then, you know, whether we're dissatisfied with ourselves or not, I mean, that could be also. We're not satisfied with our life. So learning in the moment to have the capacity to dwell in a place of calmness and ease, no matter what's going on around you, is something you learn in meditation. And then you can take it with you into your life, into your relationships, into your work, into society. But it's internal. Is that clear? So meditation is not just kind of over here. Mindfulness, concentration, and you know, it's not like over here and then there's life. People often say, well, what about real life? You know, like, that's great, but what about real life? You know, people say that. It's like, you know, I mean, isn't this real? What we're doing? I mean, this is reality. This is real. What, this is not real, and somehow when you get out, you know, when you go to work, that's real? Everything's real. In that sense. Right. Because actually, in Buddha's teaching, and this, I know this is, you know, not the context of this retreat, but in truth, our whole relationship to what we call the world, to phenomena, is all being processed by what? By mind, our minds. How do we know anything? Because we have a mind. Right? We, you know, the things the eye sees, the sounds we hear, the smell, the taste, the feelings, the memories, the thoughts, you know, the perceptions of everything, internal, external, are all being processed by what? The mind. Right? So reality is something that's experienced by what? The mind. What else is experiencing it? Does anybody have something else inside them that experiences life and then they have their minds over here? So it is the mind that is that is the key, the center of life. It is the way every human being, from infancy until the moment before death, we experience life, we experience whatever we call reality through the mind. And so, maintaining and attending to the quality of the mind, one would think is the most essential thing that one can do. Right? It's like I'm wearing glasses. I mean, if my glasses are filthy and distort everything, right? I mean, am I kind of wasting time to clean them? You know, I mean, right? Am I wasting time to? I mean, would somebody go, Fred? There's a lot of things to do today. What are you wasting your time cleaning your filthy glasses? Come on, get going, get doing something. Well, you might say, but with my glasses filthy, I can't really do things well because I can't see clearly. Right? So spending time cleaning my glasses helps me deal with reality. Is that clear? Now, what if the problem isn't just that I have dirty glasses, but, maybe some of you, I've done this sometimes, you know, let's say you have tinted glasses, right? So I have sometimes walked into my house wearing my sunglasses and wondered, gee, it's so dark in here. What's going on? You know what I mean? It's like, and I think the problem is what? The house, you know, is it? You know what I mean? Like, what's, right? Anybody else have that issue? It's like you think the first thing you go to is the problem's the house, right? I mean, are the shutters closed or is it, you know, the light, you know, what's going on here? It's so dark. Sometimes it takes a little while to realize, oh, I'm wearing sunglasses. Right? And that's coloring everything that I'm seeing. Well, if the mind is that which has experienced everything, if my mind has a very strong coloring because of the causes and conditions that have created the mind, then I don't really have much of a clue of what's really going on in reality, do I? Yeah. So this essential quality of meditation being a process that allows us to clean the lens that is distorting, that allows us to see things clearly, is essential if we want to, us as individuals, the human race, you know, how are we going to deal with things in an intelligent way if we can't even see what the problem is? It's all distorted. How am I going to eliminate my own suffering if I can't see clearly what's going on within my own mind? I mean, all I can ever do is what? Guess, make an effort, not really knowing, not seeing clearly. So this process of, like we're here on retreat, of putting down all the activities that constantly distract us and saying, I want to spend 4 days just working with my mind. Okay? So why don't we just stop here a second? Are there any questions about anything I've said so far that doesn't make sense, that you're not sure? Again, I mean, this is a journey we're taking together over these 4 days. I just don't want to feed you the teachings and the practices. I want to make sure that you understand why we're doing them and why you're doing them. And so does anybody have any questions related to anything I've said this morning or any of the practices that we've done so far in this retreat? Yes, Gunther. There's no meal.
Oh, there is no meal.
Okay, yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean that I let other people roll over, right?
Are you asking me or you're...
No, just asking.
Somehow, Gunther, knowing you, I don't think you let people roll over you too much. But so I don't know if that's much of a problem for you. But yes, so Gunther's question, and I'll just... Because it's sort of semantics, but often when people hear, "Oh, I have to accept things," that means I can't do anything. You see, like is that like it's an excuse for passivity, right? And we know there are many people who live a life with their head down in sort of a passive way. But it's coming from fear, okay? Or it's coming from not wanting to cause waves because I want everybody to like me or I don't want anybody angry. You know what I mean? There can be all kinds of things that look like, you know, acceptance, but that really aren't because they're not coming from a healthy place. So when I use the word acceptance, it doesn't mean we don't do anything. It means I begin with a place of accepting that this is what's going on. Okay? So you come to the table, your expectation is soon will there be food. 5, 10, 15 minutes goes by, there's no food. That's what's happening in reality. There's no food. Okay? Now, it doesn't mean you don't may get up or go ask Elena, who's head of the kitchen, you know, give her a note what's going on. Or if you were somewhere else, it doesn't mean you don't act, right? But you act from a place of understanding. You act from a place, usually we act from a place of projection. You know, we're angry. Well, I can't believe it. You know what I mean? There's no understanding in that, that maybe there's a problem, right? That the food's not out or... And who knows, you know, there could be all kinds of issues. So it doesn't mean we're not curious about what's going on and we don't act if we need to remedy the situation. But it's we begin from this place of calmness that comes from acceptance, right? And many people, again, that's very hard to do because we think we have, what mobilizes us is always anger or fear. Right. I got to wait till I'm good and angry before I do anything. But we don't have to be angry to act. We can know there's something wrong. There's something wrong in our world, right? We can know that. And we can understand all the causes and conditions that have gotten the world to this place or have gotten this person to this place or have gotten me to my place. Oh, right. So again, as I've already said, many people may already be disappointed that the person they brought with them on retreat is not the perfect self they wanted to bring with them, is not the perfect meditator, right? Anybody here already disappointed that the perfect meditator didn't come with them? Yeah, what a disappointment. But the truth is we are who we are and we brought our minds with us, for better or worse. That's just the truth. So we're not angry at ourselves, we're not disappointed, we're not, you know, get into a funk because I don't have the mind I want to have. I don't have the clarity I want to have. I don't have the meditative acumen that I think I deserve or I should have after practicing these years. You know, all that nonsense. At the end of the day, all of us have the mind that we have cultivated for decades, if not lifetimes. That's all. Now, the question is, there's only one question. What do I do now? See, what do I do now? Yeah. My mind's out of control. It's going this way and that way, or I'm in a funk, or, all right. What do you want to do now? How do I want to respond to this? What's an intelligent, compassionate, wise way to respond to this? So that's active. But it doesn't get hung up in negative emotionality. It doesn't get hung up in wrong thinking. Is that clear? It doesn't do any of that. Now, it's like I said earlier. We're here to practice some very simple practices. But you're going to run into yourself. Because he or she will be just doing all the stuff it always does. Is that clear? But usually we don't notice it, you see, because it's kind of background and it seems sort of normal and we identify with it. So we don't know it. We're not mindful. We're not aware. But hopefully here we are, you know, we're doing the practice. We also have an idea. We have an eye on ourselves. We're watching ourselves and we're watching how he or she deals with things. Is that clear? And we are, you know, we want to work with that. We want to help that part of us stop creating suffering, agitation for itself. We want a calm mind. Isn't that why we came here? Isn't that what the retreat description? We want a calm mind, and yet we may observe that our mind is agitating itself. Getting itself upset. And we have to attend to that. Now, there are many different ways to attend to that, but is that clear? Again, we're not disappointed in ourselves. We're not angry in ourselves. We're not pejorative about ourselves. We don't call ourselves names. We don't shut down. We don't get despondent. We're just present. And what would be a response to this situation that would be helpful? Right? What are the teachings and the practices that help calm an agitated mind? What are the teachings or the practices that one can do to energize a dull or torpid mind? That's all. I'm kind of bored. All right. So how do you know, what are the reflections that help me energize myself? How do I create enthusiasm for the practice within myself? Do you hear what I keep saying? Within me. See, the solutions within, the problems within me and the solutions within me. But that's not the world, the way the world operates, right? We think the externals or something are the cause of my problems and I got to do something else or, you know, to solve it. No. Whatever the problem is, it's arising in me, it's arising in my mind, and I'm the one that's got to come up with a solution that helps me deal with it in a way that is, you know, promotes calmness and ease and helps me bring forth wholesome or positive emotionality rather than negative. Well, that was a long-winded answer. Sorry about that. Are there any other questions about anything that we've talked about so far? So you will be. So the practices of calm abiding, which are known but formally as samatha, it's sort of a Sanskrit and Pali word, samatha, which is translated as calm abiding or mental tranquility, meditation, is a very central series of practices that one does in the Buddhist path. Even though it is considered that it is only insight and understanding that really has the capacity to free us from our suffering. And there's a whole body of teaching called insight meditation. That what comes first is creating a calm and stable mind. A mind that has some clarity to it. A mind that has some degree of ability to concentrate and rest the mind on whatever it is that we want to rest it on. That without having some degree, not perfection, but some degree of samatha, some degree of calm abiding, some degree of stability, that insights, even if they come, there's nothing to hold them. They come and they go. Right? So it is a mind that has some degree of stability to it. It is able then to carry that insight into the ongoing experience that we're having every day. So there are many people here who may look back on their life and go, gee, I've had a lot of insights. Right? I've had a lot of insights in my life. I've had a lot of understandings. Understandings that have just come to me, understandings when I've talked to someone, understandings when I've read something. Right? I've had good understanding. Just one step below a genius sometimes, I think. And yet, I don't live it. And yet, it hasn't really permeated my life that I can live from these insights, right? Now, why is that? Well, it's often because we don't have samatha. We don't have the stability and clarity of mind that can hold that insight and bring it into life in a consistent way. So to have a calm mind is to have a mind that is consistently calm. It's not episodically calm. Right? Many of us are episodically calm. And then we're episodically agitated. So that's not a calm mind. That's a kind of state-specific kind of mind. But calm abiding is to help us develop a calm, peaceful mind that is really with us most of the time. It is our mind. The mind of agitation has become a mind of calmness. The waters are no longer always roiled up. Right? The winds aren't constantly blowing through my mind, the winds of emotionality, the winds of afflictive mind states. You know, I'm not constantly just being knocked around. Calm doesn't mean, you know, there aren't some ripples on the water. It doesn't mean that, from time to time, there aren't waves. But they don't throw me. They don't disturb me. I don't get thrown off by them. I know how to ride the waves, so to speak. So, over these next 3 or 4 days, you're going to learn a series of practices that are within the tradition of calm abiding, samatha. And traditionally, there were sort of three aspects of what we call samatha. First is using an external object to focus the mind. And oftentimes that is just a pebble, a rock, small, a shell, an object. Oftentimes in Buddhist tradition it's a Buddha. But it's kind of using the eye sense, the visual, to kind of focus on an object and to learn to keep the mind present. It's considered an external object that has form is a little easier to grasp and to hold on to than the mental object. Is that clear? So in the Buddhist tradition, we often use external things. Now again, that's also, I think, very helpful for people like us who are lay people, because we move around the world a lot. And we see things. And learning to use the external world, the world of things, and to be focused on them, like when we're eating, or when we're walking, or when we're looking at something, we're looking all the time, and learning to look at things very single-mindedly, in a concentrated way, I think is incredibly beneficial. Now, if the energy of the minds are concentrated on one thing, you can see this mind that is usually just jumping all over the place, right? And so its energies are always dispersed. We're beginning to take the energies of the mind and sort of have them move in one direction. It doesn't have to be a laser, okay? But it's sort of generally the mind is moving much more singularly in a direction, right? That is called concentration. And that is both calming and energizing, interestingly enough. It's calming because the mind is not dispersed all over the place, endlessly distracted and agitated. But it's also energizing because the energies of the minds are now focused, right? It's sort of like if you had some kind of light, and it was when it was sort of 360, kind of just one bottom, I'm just making this up, I don't know, some bulb, you know, and it's lighting up the whole room. But on the other hand, if you took the same, whatever that energy is, and put it in a flashlight and just directed it in a smaller beam, it's much more powerful. The light is much more stronger and intense than if it was diffused over everything. So learning to concentrate the mind in this way is very essential. So we often begin with an external object. Then we begin with an internal object. Now the internal object can be the breath, which is a very traditional practice in Buddhism. It can be counting the breath. It can be observing the breath, the in-breath and the out-breath. But now we're using an internal object. Some traditions use visualizations. You know, the mind creating a visualization or something, or a sound. These also can be kind of internal objects. They're called objects of meditation, objects of focus. Again, to learn to concentrate the energies of the mind. And the third category is what's often called samatha without an object, or formless meditation. And we will hopefully toward the end begin to experience that, where you're just kind of without an object, you're learning to just maintain a focused awareness without needing an object. So it's called formless meditation. And this in our tradition is often considered the best kind, especially for lay people, because, we have a lot going on in our life. And we're always moving through lots of different situations and lots of different experiences. So having a mind in and of itself without relying on a support or an object that in and of itself is calm and stable and clear there's clarity to it, is considered sort of the best practice. But again, like every other practice, there's a learning curve, right? All of us, whatever we've learned, whatever skills we've developed, we've always begun simple and moved to more difficult. And so traditionally in Samatha, we begin with that which is simple, which is a physical object or the breath, before we move into meditation without an object, but we will practice it. So this is Samatha. Now, the other thing about the way we'll be doing it in retreat, which is maybe a little different for some of you, is that even though we will be sitting in sort of these 30-minute periods, we will be actually practicing in shorter segments. So this is very important, and I really learned this more in the Tibetan meditative tradition, which puts the emphasis again on skill building, with an understanding that for many people, just maintaining concentration for 5 minutes is a strain. You see what I'm saying? And so rather than sitting for 30 minutes, and having quality for 5 minutes and then just kind of for the next 25, wouldn't it be better to, sit for five, have a bell, rest, and then begin again? So you're now walking or working in smaller segments of concentration with the idea that you're developing skill, competence. Is that clear? So we will be sitting together in meditation, but within that, who's ever leading the meditation will probably be using a bell telling you 5 minutes, 7 minutes, it'll ding, and that's an opportunity to rest. Now, resting is, especially after you've been concentrated, when you rest, it doesn't mean kind of let it all hang out. It means just resting. Let the mind just kind of let go of the object and let the mind be quiet. And let it just kind of rest, not trying to control anything. Again, thoughts, I mean, I wish I could tattoo it on all our foreheads so we would see it. Okay? Thoughts are the problem and thoughts are not the problem. Right? We begin with, we think at this point, most of us, our thoughts are our problem, right? And if we could only get rid of the thoughts, tamp down the thoughts, repress the thoughts, do some damn thing with these thoughts, then what? Then we'd be calm. And we'd be at ease. Right? But that's not going to happen. Because we all have thinking minds. It is an aspect of our mind. Right? In the same way we have eyes and ears and nose, and we have all those senses. In Buddhist psychology, our thinking mind, our conceptual mind, is just an organ. And what does it do? It thinks. Anybody notice that? That's what it does. Don't be upset by it. The problem is it's out of control. Right? It's like as if you couldn't close your eyes at night. You know, my eyes are out of control. They just don't want to, they want to keep looking. Can you see how exhausting that would be? It's like, close, right? Now, many of us have minds like that. It just wants to keep thinking, right? So, meditation is a way for us to learn to calm our minds, but not by repressing. Not by struggling. If you're repressing your mind, if you're fighting with your mind, if you're struggling with your mind, here I'm talking about your thoughts and perceptions, you are just agitating it, i.e. you're just making it worse. You might have noticed that. That's why people get frustrated, fighting with their mind. It's a fight you'll never win because the thinking mind thinks. Is that clear? The eyes see. The ears hear. The nose smell. The mouth tastes. the body senses. That's normal. It's our relationship with these senses that is so important. So, in meditation, that is why we begin with choosing a meditative object. Okay? Rather than letting the mind, you know, to its own devices, which is to continually attach to thought, stories, memories, right? Left to its own device, that is what it does. So we, through the practice of mindfulness and concentration, we learn how to put our attention somewhere else, such as an object, external, such as an object, internal, right? And learn to place our attention on that object and do our best to keep it there. That's called concentration, consistency. And it is by putting more of our energy, more of our enthusiasm into the practice of meditation and staying focused on the object that the thoughts recede on their own. You don't have to do anything. Right? You may find, let's say you're watching, you're watching a good movie, something you're very involved in. It doesn't mean you're not thinking, but you're not focused on your thinking, are you? You're focused on what? The movie. That's where your attention is. And so there could be things going on in the background, but they're not disturbing you because you're very focused on the movie. Right? If you're not very focused on the movie, well, then you could get, you know, caught up in thinking. But if you are very focused on the movie, then the thoughts aren't a problem, are they? They just come and go, background. So it's very important that we understand in this meditative practice that that's what we're doing. We are giving our minds an object to focus on, to attend to, and through the practice of mindfulness and concentration, we are learning how to rest the mind on an object and to keep it there. And part of keeping it there is that we are aware when it goes away. See, that's mindfulness too. So if every 30 seconds your mind gets distracted and you go off, if you are mindful of that and see what's happening and you see it, you relax, you don't continue, and you bring it back, what are you practicing? Mindfulness. That's the practice of mindfulness. Is that clear? I mean, because I think we have a distorted sense that I'm only practicing if I'm 100% focused. No. When you're 100% mindful, then you're practicing well. Really well, right? Which means you know, you're aware when the mind goes off. Is that clear? It's a skill. Many of us don't even have an iota of that skill, hardly. Why is that? We're somehow defective? No. Nobody taught us, right? I mean, did anybody learn mindfulness and concentration growing up? Right? When you started going to school and the teacher started stuffing information into our minds, remember? Right? Did anybody tell us about our minds and how to use our minds and how to take care of our minds? Was that a class that anybody? No. It's amazing. I mean, back then we might have had a class in personal hygiene, right? I don't know if they still do personal hygiene. But was there a course in mental hygiene? No, crazy. So the fact that your mind is sort of out of control and that you don't know how to calm it and stabilize it and clarify it is just a skill problem. A skill deficit in modern terms. Is that clear? Nothing to get bent out of shape about. Nothing to get angry at yourself or anything. Is that clear? It's just, oh. So And again, the way we'll be doing it here, by breaking it into shorter periods, I think will give you a sense we're just developing a skill, right? And by consistency of short periods, we will get better and better at it over time. Again, it's a very common occurrence that people, when they begin the meditative path, they think that somehow the meditation is causing them to have more thoughts than they ever had, right? Sort of like a boomerang effect. But it's not true. It's just that we've never noticed what's going on. And often when we begin to practice meditation and mindfulness and try to place the mind somewhere, then we become aware that this mind doesn't want to stay anywhere. It doesn't want to follow our directions at all, does it? That's okay. That's why we call this a training procedure. We're training the mind in mindfulness. Training the mind in concentration. Are there any questions about what has been talked about so far? Anything not clear? Yes, Candace.
So, if my mind is jumping around,
mm-hmm.
I'm not concentrating.
Okay, your thoughts are jumping around. See, it's important that we develop a terminology that is accurate. Our thoughts are jumping around. Right? There are a lot of birds flying through the sky. The sky is not flying. Okay? So there are a lot of thoughts moving through your mind. Okay. So you were asking a question. Okay. So?
As long as I'm, I guess what I hear you saying, as long as I'm focused on those many thoughts moving, I'm still concentrated.
Well, it's but you're not following them. You see, it's sort of like, it's a difference. It's sort of like, again, I mean, I could, I could be sitting in the lunchroom, okay? Let's say I'm sitting there, right? Just peacefully sitting there in a chair. And then I see, all of a sudden, what happens? All these people come in, 42 people. All of a sudden, they just come in. A lot of activity, you know, grabbing their dishes and grabbing their trays and spooning this on and spooning that on. And you know what I mean? A lot of movement around, getting their, forgetting this, running back and getting that. And you know what goes on? It looks like, all right, now, do I have to get agitated? Do I have to kind of feel that energy? No, I can just be observing it, seeing it, very relaxed. Right? I don't have to get up and I don't have to follow one person around. I can just sit there. That's what we're talking about. The mind is calm. But there can be a lot of external and internal activity. But it doesn't have to color our mind. Mind has no color. But we color it with our moods, with our mind state. You know, and again, I mean, this sounds easy, but first, you know, we want to get the conceptual picture, and then in the meditation we practice. Yes, sir.
You described the Tibetan practice of short-term focus and letting go. Is that letting go a way of getting used to shifting from focus to formless meditation?
Yeah, it is a way. It's kind of, yeah, so the question is, yeah, it's both and. It's a way, it's actually a way, in a very practical way, that we're working in short periods. So we're developing, it's sort of like, I often use the example, you know, like people who work out, they call it reps, you know, people go, they work, you do some reps and then you stop and you relax. Okay, now, You could also say, oh, the person's also learning how to experience their muscles relaxed. Now, usually I don't think people talk about that, but I think that's a very good thing. Yeah. But usually, that's why when I said relax, I said, don't let it go. Don't just let the mind just go anywhere. But yeah, you've just been very concentrated. The mind has been focused on something, on an object. That's been holding, right? And now you relax it. But you maintain, to the best of your ability, that clarity of mind, right? So you are getting a little sense of having the same mind without having to grasp on an object. I mean, again, like if you can think about working out, right? I mean, unless you're planning on being a professional weightlifter, right? I mean, why are you working out? I mean, why are you doing all this stuff? Lifting weights, jumping around, you know, I don't know. You know, why are we doing all this? Those who do it, why are you doing it? What? To feel good. I mean, if, you know what I mean, it's not... Again, you know what I mean? You're not a professional, right? You're doing all these different things because basically you want to feel good in your body. You want to have energy. You want to feel strong. You want to feel healthy. Isn't that right? I mean, so why do we do all these different practices? So we can feel good in our mind, to have a healthy mind, right? Is that clear? It's about the mind. Don't get hung up on the practices. The practices are a means to help us get there, right? You know, all whatever exercise program you do, that'll help you have to feel good in your body, right? Isn't that why we do it? Yeah. So that's important to remember. Are there any other questions about the practice? So let me say something. Before we end, about mindfulness. Mindfulness is a very important term for us to understand correctly. It is more than just being present. It has the in the word of Smriti, it has that connotation of being present, knowing where you are. But equally, it has this connotation of remembering, not forgetting. This is important. Okay? What this means is that just to place your mind on your breath, some people might have noticed that they can do that, right? They get the instruction. Now, go into your body, right? Feel your body breathing. Everybody know that instruction? And what do? We can go in there and do it. For how long? Not long. Now, because the not long is because we don't have real mindfulness. Okay. So mindfulness not only, in other words, mindfulness reveals that I am focused on my breath. I am mindful of my breath. But without recollecting the instructions to continue the focus on the breath, I'll be off in a minute, right? So mindfulness has this important quality of recollection. It's remembering. It's like sometimes you're doing something and you forget why you're doing it. You know, like, what am I doing here? And I walked into this room for something. Chris seems to know that one, right? See, there's no, you know, see, if mindfulness was just walking into the room, it would only be half, you see what I mean? It wouldn't have any intelligence to it. You see, so mindfulness has this intelligent quality to it. It's not only walking in the room, it remembers, right? You know, it has criteria. And it also knows when you walk into the wrong room. Oh, I've walked into the wrong room. Is that clear? So mindfulness, and this is important to realize, this is another skill we are developing. And many for us, we thought mindfulness was just placing the mind on an object, right? But then we forget the instructions and we forget what we're supposed to be doing 2 minutes later. And we go off. Okay, so mindfulness is very important. It keeps bringing us back. So that is why we have to realize that in our meditation practice, not only do we have to learn to place the mind on an object, but we have to continually find ways to remind ourselves to continue the practice. That's why, again, doing it in 3 minute, 5 minute segments helps us develop that skill. It's like, can I just for 5 minutes, right, count my breath from 1 to 21 without losing count, right? See, so now we're developing criteria. There is a third criteria in concentration, which is the quality. The quality of our concentration, which has to do with sort of this balance. You know, the famous, when somebody asked the Buddha about, what is the mind state of a meditator? What is the correct mind state? And I think the person who asked it was a lute player, lute like a guitar player, and the Buddha used his musicianship as a way of saying, when your strings are too loose, how does the melody sound? And it goes, no, it sounds terrible. When your strings are too tight, how does it sound? And again, it's tinny, it doesn't sound right. Or with the other, there's really no sound if they're too loose. And the Buddha said, yeah, in the same way, in our mindfulness, our meditation, we want to, be not too loose and not too tight. So this dichotomy of looseness and tightness as a criteria is sort of the third. Maybe just for today, we'll just get on the first, which is, can I place my mind on the object? Can I hold it there? And when it goes off, can I remember to bring it back? Okay? Now, once one's developed some ability and skill in that area, and the mind does, more or less rest with some stability, then we can look at the quality of that resting. Is it very clear? Right? Is there clarity in the mind? Is there stability in the mind? Is there ease in the mind? Is there alertness in the mind? It's sort of remembering that there's a qualitative piece. Right? Is that clear? It's sort of like, if you're learning, an instrument in the beginning, you're just trying to get what? Just trying to get the notes. You're trying to hit the right note, right? Then once you hit the right note, you're trying to put it together so it kind of sounds a little bit like a song or a melody, right? Is that clear? And so once you've kind of learned how to hit the right notes and you learn how to play the song, then you can begin to focus on the quality of the sound. Is that clear? So this is really the same thing. I mean, we have to demystify this process and realize the only reason it is so difficult for us is because we are just not used to, looking at the capacity of our mind and realize there are skills that need to be developed, and they are developed like any other skill. Through practice, through discipline, through vigilance, through repetition. Okay. So there's no personal fault here. Right? Many people go, this is too hard for me. I just can't do it. There's something wrong with my mind. No, there's nothing wrong with your mind. And there's nothing wrong with you. You just haven't developed the skill. Right? I mean, if you've never worked out, and your muscles are all flabby, and you go to the gym and you say, well, I'm going to pick up that 100, 250 pound over there, it's like, and you go, oh, this is too hard for me. You know, I'm just going to give up, right? I just don't have the capacity. Can you see? You'd go, I mean, if you were there, you'd say to the person, oh, come here. You know, no. That's something you work up to, right? Why don't you come over here? You know, here are the 5-pound weights. Let's see how you do with those, right? And then you can move up to the 8s and the 10s. Is that clear? I mean, it's common sense. But we don't have common sense when we come to our meditative life. We think somehow we should be able to sit down, you know, I've heard the instructions, I've read the text, but, you know, now I'm going to sit down and do it. Anybody in here have that mindset? And think that somehow you're going to be able to do it. And then you can't do it and you think it's too hard for you. Oh, this is too hard. I just don't have the ability. Or else there's something wrong with me. It's none of that. And so we have to have a correct mindset when we approach meditation so we can benefit from it. And I assure you, you will benefit from it. The same way if you're working with a personal trainer or somebody and they say, oh, don't worry, yeah. I mean, it may be a number of months, but you'll be able to lift these one day. Yeah. But we start here, right? And it's not like that personal trainer is some kind of mystic. You know what I mean? Or has ESP, you know, that they can see into the future. No, they just know from their experience, you know, that anybody who doesn't have any kind of significant, you know, problem or disability with their body, you know, can with a modicum of success learn how to develop their muscles, right? Their strength. Is that true? Is there anybody in here who's developed the strength of their muscles? What? Sally Barr, living proof.
I started small and mm-hmm. I worked up.
Yeah. And the beginning, did somebody tell you that one day you would get stronger?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not mystical. It's just that's just the way it is, isn't it? And so please, diligence and vigilance and consistency and enthusiasm and faith. Faith is a big one. Faith meaning, you know, confidence in the process, confidence in the teacher, confidence in the teachings, that when they tell you, you know, even though Sally may go, I'll never do that. Right? No, I'll never do that. You know, but you have confidence in the trainer, whoever it is, who says, no, you'll do it. Just show up, you know, and just do it, right? So it's just like that. So we have to have confidence. This path is very clear. It's a 2,600-year-old path. Millions and millions and millions and millions of people have transformed themselves through this process by following one step after the other. Is that clear? Don't make it bigger than it is. Don't make it mystical or esoteric or anything like that. It's very simple, very pragmatic. And just because it relates to the mind that it seems kind of hard for us to grasp, than physical, you know, then, but it's really the same. Okay, so before we end, are there any questions? Anything not clear? Yeah, it's all kind of simple. So again, there'll be instructions when you come into the meditation hall in terms of what practices to do, but the general instruction is, you know, to maintain this kind of mindfulness as you go about all the activities of the retreat to the best of your ability. What's your ability? I don't know. You need to know. Don't be comparing your ability to somebody else's ability. Okay? Your ability is wherever you're starting, you know, wherever, whatever your ability is, whatever you're able to do. Now, it doesn't mean, like we were saying with Gunter earlier, that it doesn't mean we can't raise it up a little bit when we're present to it. But we start where we are. So please make an effort as you go about the retreat, as we take a break now and do outdoor walking meditation, when we come back in and we have lunch, when we take the rest, when we come back for mindful movements and meditation, all the things we do, to remain present. Right. And to practice mindfulness, which means you know when you're present and you know when you're not. If you don't have the second piece, it's not going to work. So please, again, if you have to remind him or her 10,000 times today to come back, to focus, you know, we're just eating here. Just taste the food. We're just walking. Just feel yourself walking. We're just looking at the tree. That's all, you know. We got to learn to talk with ourselves. You know, it could be very simple. In this way, that helps us be mindful. Okay? I mean, are we clear? That's the practice. Many people think, you know, when they're doing that, that they're not doing the practice. That somehow I should be completely mindful all the time. No. How could you be? Are we clear?